So as usual, when the Ajahn asked me to give a Dhamma talk, part of my mind started scrambling looking for some topic, something to say. So the sense of uncertainty about what's going to come out makes me a little nervous. But a theme that seems to be coming up is the theme around illness. So right now Lori's father's in the hospital with a heart condition, had a pacemaker put in. And I used to work in hospitals. I was a transporter. I had the job of transporting medications between the pharmacy and the different floors, specimens from the different floors down to the lab, and then people from operating rooms and delivery rooms, etc., to wherever they were going. So I was doing that as a college job. And so I got to see a fair number of people being sick and being in the hospital, and also a fair number of corpses. So being in the hospital, having a pacemaker put in, that's a fairly heavy thing. A few years ago, my father was in the hospital. He had a quintuple bypass, open heart surgery. They had to take some vein out of his leg and use it to rebuild arteries in his heart. But that's held together for about 10 years now, so he's hanging in there. But each one of these occasions when someone goes into the hospital for a major situation like that could just as well be the time they're checking out permanently. Something like that happened to my mother. She was having some trouble with digestion, and she went to the clinic, and they sent her to the hospital, and she was suffering from a condition called a strangulated bowel, where part of the intestine got twisted and kind of twisted shut like a toy balloon, kind of twist shut. And the only way to fix it is for surgery. So they did the surgery and they fixed it, but then she had complications arising from the surgery. And one thing led to another in these complications, and she was in her early 70s. And that ended up being her final illness. She never made it out of the hospital, or she made it from the hospital to the hospice and died there. Never made it back to her home. And I've been doing some reflections on this business of illness. It's classified among the definition of dukkha. Birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, illness is dukkha, death is dukkha. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. It's interesting that the first four of those, birth, illness, aging, and death, are events, I guess you could say, and the other ones are responses. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. They're like mental responses to events. So yeah, illness is definitely a major source of dukkha in life. And when it comes to birth, aging, illness, and death, those things are inevitable. It's another aspect of dukkha, is that you don't get to have existence without dukkha. It comes with the package. It's part of the deal. So everybody has to face illness to a greater or lesser degree. The Ajahn's down with a cold right now, or it's been messing with his energy and his ability to speak. Lots of coughing. I had a bit of a bug the other day, decided to skip the meal. These are minor, really trivial almost, illnesses. And you get to a point in life where it seems sort of normal, where there's always something wrong. I mean, I wake up this morning and I've got a splinter in one finger. That's like an injury. I've got feels like a bone spur in one of my heels. I was just at the dentist having a filling repaired, and I noticed that the skin around the edges of my fingernails has been fraying off, kind of peeling away and leaving behind these raw edges. And so now I'm having to treat the skin on my hands to keep it from falling apart. It seems like the body is made out of wearable material that just wears away and breaks down. Even though it's supposed to be self-repairing, it's pretty good at being self-repairing, but it's not perfect. And so sooner or later, every part of the body will break down. I've been noticing that as I get older, that it seems there's less reserve, there's less strength, there's less endurance. It takes longer to heal from little injuries than it used to. I'm much more likely to be short of breath when I'm working. And my fingernails split or break off if I do something with them that I used to be able to do. Like I can't, if I try to pull a thumbtack out of a bulletin board, if I'm not careful, I might like break my fingernail. And my fingernails used to be really tough, but they're weak now. And the same with my skin. If I'm working in the shop and not really careful, I slip with a tool and the tool hits me on the hand or the wrist or something like that, I'm going to bleed. There'll be blood every time. So it seems that's just the way it goes. The skin gets thinner and weaker. And it's not anything wrong. There's nothing wrong. It's like that's normal. You could say that's supposed to happen. We get thin, we get weak, we get frail, we get feeble, we lose our vitality. And this is part of aging and this is part of sickness. And because it's inevitable and it's included in this whole round of existence, you could say that sickness is somehow deeply connected with truth. The truth that the Buddha is pointing to is a singular truth. And those things which were relevant or had some bearing on it, he mentioned, or somehow are included in the teaching. So there's these facts of human life which are central to the very process of being human. And those facts get included in the Dhamma. So the fact of birth, and the fact of aging, and of sickness. And of course, death. That's the thing about sickness. Sickness is always reminding you that your body is vulnerable. It's fragile. And it will die. It's subject to death. So when someone gets sick, or when I get sick, when any of us get sick, whether it's a minor illness or a major illness, it's an opportunity to reflect on that truth, the significance of it. You could say that what sickness means is the Dhamma. The fact that the body gets sick is ripe, you could say it's ripe, with the three characteristics of conditioned existence, which are anicca, impermanence, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, and anatta, not self. For surely if it were self, we wouldn't permit it. We would have some say over it. We would say, no, I don't really want to be sick, so no thanks. But it's not, so it's not under our control. And it's pointing to the constant changing nature also of the body and of experience. So yesterday, my heel felt fine, and today I'm limping a little bit. I don't know why exactly. But that's just how it is. The body just does is subject to these things all the time. There are these 32 parts of the body that are part of a traditional reflection. And one of the things that you memorize when you're a monk, but gets recited from time to time from the chanting book. And they make a pretty good catalog of what it is that the body is actually composed of. Hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin. These first five parts are the superficial parts, the parts that you can see, observe on the ordinary person. And a lot of attention gets put into these parts to make them as beautiful as possible. Especially hair, but also nails and teeth. We want our teeth and our nails and our hair to be presentable, and our skin. And then there's flesh, muscle, There's bones. There's sinews that connect the muscles to the bones, tendons, bone marrow. In the internal organs, there's kidney and heart and liver and the membranes that attach the intestines to the wall of the abdomen. And there's the spleen, the lungs, and the bowel, the intestines, the stomach. And then there's all the stuff that's in those things. There's undigested food. There's always some amount of feces in the body. There's urine, pus and bile, phlegm, blood, sweat, tears, fat, grease, spittle, mucus, synovial fluid, urine I already mentioned, and also brains. So if you take each one of these things and you look at them, every single one of them is subject to illness. You can get a bladder infection, you can have problems with your joints that have to do with the synovial fluid. I was just reflecting on a friend of the monastery at Abhayagiri named Iris. And she was in her early 60s. And one day at the monastery, she was a really good supporter. She was there a lot. And she was complaining about a cough that wouldn't go away. So she went to a clinic and they diagnosed her with like walking pneumonia, put her on antibiotics. So early 60s, you know, I guess it could happen. But the cough still didn't go away. So they did a closer look and they found that, no, it's not pneumonia. It's lung cancer. And so far as I know, she never smoked or anything. It's just random case of lung cancer. And so we were doing the paritas, chanting the paritas for Iris for several months. And then eventually that same year, we were chanting the funeral chants for her. You never know when some illness will develop into what comes next, which is death. The body's constantly dying. Every cell in the body has a limited lifespan. And some cells reproduce, and then one of the reproductive halves will die. Some cells die because of infection or some other assault on the body, and they get replaced maybe or maybe not. As aging proceeds, more and more vital cells die and don't get replaced. And so there's literally less and less vital mass of the body, with the exception of maybe a few not so useful cell types like fat will tend to proliferate. The only immortal cells that are in the body tend to be cancer cells. They don't die. They just keep reproducing. But ordinary human cells, they have a limited lifespan. They die. So it's the whole body's kind of made of dying stuff. And so this is a very powerful truth, and that's of course why it's part of the Dhamma. That which is not self, that which is impermanent and constantly changing, subject to change, subject to becoming otherwise, cannot be self. And this constant otherwiseness, this constant flux, is disturbing. It's not fun, not comfortable. It's unsatisfactory. That's the nature of dukkha. It has that flavor of unsteadiness or unwantedness. One translation of dukkha is that which is difficult to bear. And for sure, it's difficult to bear being in a hospital and having them put a catheter into your urinary tract so they can do an operation while you're unconscious, and then waking up and having them tell you your odds for survival or what your prognosis is, or ask you to sign a form which releases them from any kind of liability if something goes wrong. That's not comfortable. That's dukkha. So here it is, where you've got this body which is made of dukkha, or that which is subject to dukkha, or gives rise to dukkha, and that which is constantly showing its impermanence, its constant change. You get illnesses of skin, of teeth, my nails. Nails get illnesses. You can get a fungus. I had a fungus infection once. My toenail that wouldn't go away. It wasn't so long ago in human history that you could get a cut on your hand while handling anything, farm equipment. And that cut could get infected, and there was literally nothing medical science at the time could do. This wasn't very long ago, before the invention of antibiotics. And that cut on your hand, having got infected, could lead to an infection of the blood, sepsis, and that would kill you. So you could die, and you could be really young, 32 or something. Lots of that sort of thing in the records. If you're a woman and you're subject to giving birth to children, very good chance, or not very good chance, but a substantial chance that you would die during childbirth, either from the trauma of childbirth itself or from complications arising from that process, because it's actually pretty hard on the body to give birth to children. When we see the fact that the body gets ill and that it's showing these characteristics, it's not really something to be morose about or depressed about or sad about. It's just the truth. It's something that needs to be looked at very carefully and understood, because that's the nature of the Dhamma. It's not meant to be a bummer or something to bring you down, to make you unhappy. It's actually something to make you happy. And so the point of reflecting on the body and on illness and on death is not to create some sense of aversion or distress or not liking for the body. Its purpose, those reflections, like the 32 parts of the body, the reflection on death, the reflection on illness, on dukkha, all these components of the Dhamma are part of wise attention. That's looking at phenomena with a proper viewpoint, a correct framework, one that's actually useful, leads someplace useful. If you look at the body as being very precious and somehow you and yours and under your control, belonging to you, representing you, identifying you, if you have these kind of views and you look at the body and it gets sick, then of course that makes it worse. If you're a young woman and you have some terrible skin condition which disfigures your complexion and causes you to appear ugly, that would be very, very distressful if you considered that your skin was somehow you. And unfortunately, most people do see this surface of their body, the skin, as being very, very important for their image in the world. It's who they are. And this can't ever really lead to a great outcome because, skin gets wrinkled. It gets kind of leathery and thin and has little blood vessels popping up on it. And it doesn't matter how beautiful you were when you were young. It gets not so great when you're old. So to see it correctly, to see it the right way, or the way that's, you can say, skillful. The skillful way to see it is to see it as that is the nature of the body. It is not one's own possession. It is merely a prominent facet of one's experience. But that doesn't make it one's own, one's possession. And to sort of soberly recognize that these facts point in a certain direction. And they point towards the direction of not clinging to the body as self. And not viewing the body as a source of satisfactoriness, a source of happiness and joy. Not taking a refuge in the body as such. Merely seeing it for what it is. It's this biophysical organism that is at the nexus of our existence as human beings, but it is of its own nature. And we're kind of going along for the ride. if that's seen clearly enough and deeply enough, then when the body gets sick, it's not really a problem. When the body gets old, it's not really a problem, because that's what they do, and this one's doing it too, and so what? If it didn't do that, you'd be really shocked. If your body never got sick or never got old, that would be very strange. And of course, when it's time for the body to die, it doesn't have to be a cause for alarm or upset or shock or grief or pain or mental distress. If you're not prepared, though, when it's time to die, if you're not ready, if you haven't been practicing, then you very well may be horrified or shocked or terror-stricken or distressed or in some other way upset when the realization dawns that death is right around the corner. Death is coming. Death is very near. It's funny because we think that death is somehow always far away right up until the moment when it starts to happen. There's a tendency to look at it that way. And that's not a very helpful way to look at it, because it doesn't do much to prepare you for the inevitability of it. It's actually more helpful to recognize that death is right here, right now, really close. There's an image in some literature and some South American artwork of death being shown as a figure, like a skeleton or a ghoul of some sort, always hovering over one's left shoulder, like a shadow. But every time you turn to the left to look at it, it flits away. Just out of the corner of your eye, you might catch a glimpse of it if you turn fast enough. Death is always with us. It's right there in between breaths. If you breathe out and you don't breathe in, that's the end. If your heart beats, and then there's a pause between beats, and the next beat never comes, that's the end. The whole body's made of this kind of vulnerable, fragile process that almost miraculously keeps going from one moment to the next. And so it's not so much that death is an anomaly. Death is baked in the cake. It's constantly ready for you. And the question is whether you will be ready for it when it finally happens. Because that's the nature of this aggregate of the body. Illness and death. If you've been reflecting on it and you see it correctly, then death can also be just another natural event. Inevitable, not particularly pleasant, but not a big deal. Not a problem. Acceptable, you can say. Like right now, my ankle hurts a little bit. That's normal. My ankle always hurts when I sit like this for a while. Human bodies, they always die. That's just what they do. It's okay. That kind of an attitude towards death is one that can serve you really well when the time comes. And it also frees up a lot of mental energy, you can say, a lot of time, energy to do other things. Right? If you're not worried about your body and you're not kind of obsessed about your appearance or your health or your longevity, then you can spend your time doing things that are more interesting. And it could be anything from just interesting hobbies to practicing Dhamma. Practicing Dhamma is a really good one. And that's one of the major benefits of reflecting correctly on sickness, on illness. The other one is that, even more importantly, that if you reflect this way on the nature of the body, and you see that every component of it is made up of this same sort of imperfect substance, you know, its fragility and its utter dependence on conditions being just right. Temperature has to be just right. Oxygen content has to be just right. Nutrient flow has to be just right. A little bit of interruption, and it doesn't work anymore. So every part of it's like that. if you see it that way and you investigate it that way, then because it leads to a clear understanding of the truth of the body, it also leads to a clear understanding of the truth of all conditioned phenomena. And understanding that leads in the direction of Nibbana, leads in the direction of understanding the highest truth, understanding existence itself, understanding how consciousness and perception come to be, and finding the release from those things, which is again the release from suffering itself, the release from death. One who does not own a body does not die. So I offer that for reflection this afternoon.